happen, we have to really escalate the noise we make so that we'll be heard.
Welcome to Gay USA. I'm Andy Hum.
I'm Ann Northrup.
Are you sitting down, everyone? In the news this week, a woman who was hired, notoriously anti-LGBT, was fired for attacking her own agency for being too pro-LGBT.
This was a Trump appointee, and the Trump administration fired her. Doesn't mean we have to like them, but, you know, stop clock right twice a day. And in more good news, a hospital in Chicago has issued an historic apology for surgeries performed on intersex infants.
We have anti-transgender violence to report on in Portland, Oregon and Rochester, New York. But in Georgia, a wrongfully convicted trans man was released after 9 years in prison.
The U.S. Postal Service, still alive at this moment as we speak, features its first postage stamp of someone in drag.
We have setbacks to report in Mexico and the Cayman Islands.
We're back to bad news. A little better. The European Union is making Poland pay a price for its anti-LGBT bigotry. Not a huge price, but something.
In COVID news, activists and researchers are protesting the exclusion of people with HIV from the COVID-19 vaccine trials.
Terrible. Out gay, legendary Broadway producer Tom Curtehy is given a surprise honor, and we will show you that. It's nicely touching.
But, you know, let's start off with John Lewis, if we could.
Sure.
Watched his funeral. We have a picture there of his hearse when he was coming through Atlanta, stopping in the Rainbow Crosswalk there. And at his service, the former mayor of Atlanta, Bill Campbell, called Lewis a gay rights hero. And Obama integrated sexual orientation into his remarks. I thought it was a brilliant eulogy. And he was also giving us a call to action, President Obama, on voting rights, the post office, and not to continue on the road to fascism. What we have to do. I thought it was, you know, it was encouraging watching.
I'm impressed that, John Lewis left a lot of instructions of. So I don't know if stopping in the Rainbow Crosswalk was his idea or his family or colleagues' idea. But I thought it was, of course, a wonderful touch and a great acknowledgement of what a complete ally he's been to us for decades and decades.
Okay. Should we go into national news and the stuff with Trump?
Sure.
Well, yes, the thing we talked about at the top of the show, we told you about this woman, Merritt Corrigan, a notorious homophobe, famous for it, was appointed by Trump to the U.S. Agency for International Development, which has long been a bastion of evangelical Christians around the world. But she was ousted this week for using her personal Twitter account and tweeting that the U.S. is losing influence by refusing to help countries who don't celebrate sexual deviancy. And she attacked the agency for taxpayer-funded documents claiming we cannot tell someone's sex or gender by looking at them, and that not calling yourself cisgendered is a microaggression. I'm not cis anything. I'm a woman, she said. Oh, she got in trouble for this. She got the job by praising the Hungarian dictator Viktor Orban as the shining champion of Western civilization. I mean, this sounds like something out of Monty Python or something. She is expected to hold a press conference saying that she was fired for her religion.
Well, she tweeted a nice little list of her values. Gay marriage isn't marriage. Men aren't women. U.S.-funded Tunisian LGBT soap operas aren't America first. Are there Tunisian LGBT soap operas, or was that just her way of trying to sound say that we're being quite extreme in who we support? But yes, she is claiming religious persecution for her firing. She was quite a number. And all of this was known before she was hired. And for some strange reason, they've decided to hold her to account and fire her.
She started attacking the agency, which was going to accommodate her. But then, you know, she was like, you're not supposed to do this when you take a job with an agency, attack the agency. But she was standing up for the American people and for women.
And thank you to the House of Representatives, which was standing up for the American people by again passing a measure to repeal the ban on trans people in the military. The Senate will kill this in the National Defense Authorization Bill, but the House keeps trying, and that's a good thing.
Now, Trump has promised a new list of judges that he's going to run on in November. Now, he has drawn solely from the Federalist Society. I don't remember the guy's name. Somebody from the Federalist Society called him a fascist this week, I think, and you know, said he should be impeached again for the stuff that he's been saying about elections. Trump hardliners are saying that they feel betrayed by Gorsuch on Bostock. Now, Biden is assembling a list, and Biden hasn't he promised that he's going to appoint a black woman to the Supreme Court?
He has.
But he won't release the names until they're vetted.
Presidents historically do not, you know, Obama was more conservative in a lot of ways than I wanted him to be. I would fear that Biden would be too conservative about some things, but I think that he has jumped on board with the progressives in a lot of ways, in a lot of the things he's doing. I'm not crazy about his supposed last two candidates for the vice presidency, but they're certainly fine enough for me to vote for him.
Of course. And I was encouraged to read, it's not particularly a gay story, but it has to do with bigotry, that Lieutenant Colonel Alexander Vindman, who had testified at
right.
the impeachment, about Trump's criminality. And he said he was bullied and intimidated by Trump. He will now champion national security issues ahead of the elections. And he says our citizens are being subjected to the same kinds of attacks tyrants launch against their critics. And a groundswell is building that will issue a mandate to reject hate and bigotry, he said. That would be nice. And I hope he can get a job in the next administration.
Well, I think there is that groundswell, but unfortunately, every time I start to get a little complacent about that, I am reminded sharply and painfully that there are still a vast number of people in this country who are just as bigoted and hateful as they have always been, and they're out to re-elect Trump.
Now, in Kansas, they had a choice between two bigots in the Republican primary for U.S. Senate, and the uber bigot, to our dismay, Chris Kobach lost to a guy named Roger Marshall, who was also very transphobic and horrible, but apparently easier to succeed there in Kansas over Barbara Bollier, although the first poll that came out said that they're 42 to 41.
Anything is possible this year. Meanwhile, Matt...
Oh, Peter Thiel gave $1 million to the Kobach campaign. This is the gay tech executive Trump friend.
Yeah, and quite radical himself in his views. Matt Gaetz, the very right-wing Republican from Florida representative, blasted Jeff Bezos, at the tech hearing last week, for using Southern Poverty Law Center data to figure out who Amazon would and wouldn't allow to be nonprofits receiving a percentage of the Amazon buys. And he said, how dare you blacklist the American Family Association, the Family Research Council, and the Catholic Family Institute? Fine, outstanding organizations, every one of them.
Aren't they all getting a lot of federal funds? And
They all are. But if you want to know all about Matt Gaetz, there's a new documentary airing on HBO called The Swamp, which is quite clever in a lot of ways, but depressing in the end, because what it does is follow around Matt Gaetz and two other right-wing Republicans, or one of them is sort of a libertarian, Thomas Massey from Tennessee, the guy who made the Congress come back into in-person session to vote on something a couple of months ago in the middle of the pandemic, and Ken Buck from Colorado, who is really quite hard right. The Swamp on HBO. I found it very interesting, not very inspiring, but a lot about corporate money really, really controlling Congress completely. The details are in this documentary. You know it, but...
On both sides of the aisle. Look, I mean, you know, we keep taking out the same beat-up vehicle, the United States of America, and expecting that it's not going to break down again. I mean, it's the system that stinks. A better system could be designed if people would put their minds to it and hearts to it, but they don't. Now, they are starting to talk about...
Well, that's kind of the message of the documentary, too.
Right. They are starting to talk about structural reform in the Democratic platform, and Biden is buying into it around the courts. You know, Obama said, get rid of the filibuster in order to really, if you want to pass a new Judiciary Act that would expand the federal courts, at least at the lower court level, and Biden is opening himself up to this, you've got to amend the act, and you can't do that unless you can break the filibuster. Buttigieg called it a turning point. As I said, Biden is open to it. And of course, we do have to win back the Senate first. And that is a heavy lift.
Couple of footnotes. As we mentioned, Jeff Bezos, his wife, ex-wife, Lynn Mackenzie Scott, is trying to give away most of the money that she got from him in the divorce settlement. And she has just given $46 million to a number of LGBT organizations, 46 total, not 46 million to each. And it's a good, solid list of organizations that are really doing things for people, not just sort of PR fronts. And it's a thoughtful list. I appreciated that. And the other thing is that Congress, you know, in the Capitol building, they have what's called Statuary Hall.
Yes.
And each state is allowed to name two people from the state who will be represented by statues there. And some of those statues, like statues around the country, are getting rethought. And so one of the statues due for removal is a former governor of North Carolina who was just virulent racist and segregationist. So he's coming down. But who has the North Carolina Statuary Committee chosen unanimously to replace this governor in
statuary? Don't say Jesse Helms.
No.
Okay.
Billy Graham.
Will he be holding up a Bible like this?
He will be holding up an "I hate gay people" sign.
Well, they had his funeral. He lay in state at the Capitol. It's, you know, the separation of church and state is going down the tubes in this country. I'm going to say this to our evangelical, right-wing, gay-hating viewers. You're not going to like it when it's over.
We have those people? I guess everybody watches Gay USA. Why not?
Yes, they do. Some good news in Savannah, Georgia. The city council unanimously extended civil rights protections to LGBTQ people, led by the out city alderman, Curtis Purty, and a group called Proud Savannah. There are now 9 cities across Georgia that have these ordinances, including Atlanta and Decatur.
And a little good news from Kansas, in spite of the loss of Kris Kobach, which we mourn. A trans woman, Stephanie Byers, won the Democratic primary for a seat in the state house. She's an award-winning educator. There is a Republican incumbent, maybe, but that's a race that the Victory Fund is pouring some resources into, and we wish her well.
In Michigan, the Democrat minority there in the House is pushing for repeal of the state's marriage equality ban. Get it off the books. But of course, the Republicans are blocking that. Now, you can get married in Michigan, but if these things stay on the books and the Supreme Court goes another way on marriage, which I guess it doesn't look like at this point. Can we say that?
Well, I was more worried about it before. I'm less worried about it now. But, you know, we lose Ruth Bader Ginsburg in the next couple of months. And
I'm very worried about her health. I mean, she's been in and out of the hospital, and this stuff that she has is serious. But
we need her for 5 more months.
We do.
Yeah.
What about the survey that says 1 in 4 LGBTQ youth now use non-binary pronouns? That's a trend.
Oh, it's certainly a trend. When you're doing a survey like that, you know, who is answering the survey? How comprehensive is it really?
We are.
I didn't conduct that survey. So, yes, it is certainly a trend. Is it a lasting trend? Will it, if Merritt Corrigan has anything to say about it, it will not be a trend. All right. Let's go to some sadder stories. In Portland, Oregon, again, the slaughter of trans women, particularly Black trans women, continues. In Portland, Oregon, Aja Raquel Roan Spears, 33 years old, stabbed to death in a melee following a funeral and vigil for someone else who had been murdered.
Tyrell Penny, there were multiple witnesses, but the police encountered a total lack of cooperation from any of the witnesses on this, which, you know, often happens because the police are so distrusted.
Particularly in Portland, Oregon these days.
Right. In Rochester, a 30-year-old Black trans man suffered facial fractures and a concussion on Friday at 1 o'clock in the afternoon on the city's east side in what police are calling a possible hate crime. There was another victim who was 23. The police are looking for 2 suspects. The names of the victims, at least what I have not been released, but the 30-year-old is involved in the Black Lives Matter protests.
According to what I've read, 2 people have been arrested.
Oh, good.
But they have not been named yet either. Better news in this area is about trans man Kai Peterson.
Yeah.
Now, 9 years ago, he was attacked.
Sexually assaulted, raped.
Yes. And he had a gun and he defended himself and shot and killed his attacker. But the police didn't believe him. And the prosecutors obviously didn't either, and neither did the court because they convicted him.
They kept him in jail for over a year and then finally said, you want to take a plea? You want to get this moving?
A year without a lawyer.
Right. No lawyer, no nothing, no trust.
So, and then they put him in jail. He spent 5 years without access to hormones. But now, 9 years later, and, you know, they have these stand your ground laws in the South, probably elsewhere, too.
Or people who kill Black people.
Yes. It only works if you kill Trayvon Martin, who's doing nothing but carrying Skittles. At any rate, Kai was convicted, put in jail, and 9 years later, he has finally been released from prison. Short of his mandated sentence.
But he was also the first person, based on another case in a Georgia prison, to get hormone replacement therapy in prison.
Finally. He has also started an organization called Freedom Overground, and he is helping other trans people and others who have been treated this way by the judicial system.
In the prison system, and also helps them with reentry when they get out of prison. It's a wonderful program. His mother is looking forward to taking him fishing and shopping and cooking him a home-cooked meal.
More than one.
Homecoming meal, sorry.
So congratulations to Kai. Thank you for hanging in there and for giving back.
A lot of people came to his defense and started writing about the case and advocating for him. By the way, I mean, there was a rape kit that showed that he was raped.
Oh, yeah.
Just ignored the evidence.
And in support of people like this and others, in New York City this last weekend, there was a march of activists. These marches are continuing around the country, this one specifically for the liberation of Black sex workers and in support of trans people who are the target of violence. And, you know, because they get the sex workers get none of this $600 a week from the government for sex workers, no $1,200 lump sum payment. Housing problems, job discrimination. There are now online laws that prevent them from connecting ill online. They get abused by the police. And, of course, we still have the walking while trans law in New York that people are trying to repeal, but it's not happening yet. So there was a big demonstration in Times Square and march around the city. And congratulations to those who are out there marching and doing this.
And a couple of days before that, they had a demo at the Christopher Street Pier in Manhattan there to draw attention to the murderous violence against trans people.
Yes. Some of that is STAR, Mariah Lopez's group, and Reclaim Pride people. And there's going to be a march this Sunday in Birmingham, Alabama. John Lewis would be proud. 2 p.m. Sunday, the Alabama Rally Against Injustice people are holding an LGBT rally and march, Kelly Ingram Park, 2 p.m. on Sunday. So if you're in that area, check that out.
And speaking of transgender people who are getting beat up, we've told you about Dr. Rachel Levine, who is the state of Pennsylvania's health secretary, the spokesperson on all this COVID-19 stuff. And she keeps getting attacked for being trans. And now she's answering back on behalf of all LGBT people who are hurt by these attacks. And she says, I have no room in my heart for hatred. And frankly, I do not have the time for intolerance.
And she's also being defended by the out gay member of the assembly there, Brian Sims, and by the governor, Governor Wolf, who is defending her against these transphobes in the legislature. This is not just random citizens attacking her. Members of the legislature are going after her.
Right-wing legislature.
She's given universal high marks for the work she's doing on the pandemic.
We told you last week about the trans woman who was abducted off the streets of New York. We now have a picture of her. Nikki Stickers Stone, 18 years old, allegedly wanted for damaging police cameras in City Hall Park, abducted by plainclothes cops into an unmarked van. More than $15,000 has been raised to defend her. Lots of political pressure to release her, including by Speaker Cory Johnson. The mayor criticized the way it was done, but reporters are challenging him about these kinds of arrests in New York.
Well, clearly what she was doing was putting stickers on the police cameras. You put up cameras, somebody's going to put stickers on them. What do you expect? She didn't knock down the cameras.
Better than shooting them out.
Yeah, exactly. My point. But, you know, and their excuse is, well, that's where we needed to go to find her. Well,
are you allowed to cover your face? Well, actually, you're not allowed to cover your face in New York. We have a mask law. Oh, that's interesting. There's a law against masks in New York.
Observed in the breach. And in Steuben County, New York, upstate, sort of halfway between Binghamton and Buffalo. Okay. I'll bet they call it Steuben up there, but what do I know? The jail there has admitted that they mistreated a trans woman who was a prisoner, Jenna Faith. She'd been arrested as female. She's lived her life as female for many years. But somewhere in the middle of holding her for a few months, they arbitrarily one day transferred her to the men's part of the jail, where she experienced sexual harassment, abuse. They suddenly started denying her medicine. So she sued or complained. They've reached a settlement. They're going to pay her $60,000, I think. And they've agreed to all these new principles of respecting people's lived gender and providing appropriate medical care for people. It's quite a nice settlement and standard to set up in the, well, it's not the North Country specifically, but it's
upstate.
Yeah. And in L.A., the federal authorities have lodged some new complaints against Ed Buck, the guy who was enticing black gay men to his apartment and shooting them up with crystal meth until several of them died. He had already had some murder charges lodged against him or some version of that. I can't remember the exact details. But now they've added drug distribution and enticing prostitution to those charges. So Ed Buck is facing a lot of time.
And who is his attorney? Chris Darden, one of the prosecutors for OJ.
Yeah, let's get a black man to defend him so that we can't accuse him of having exploited black men.
Here's a story that starts out bad and ends, I think, okay. In Salt Lake City and Highland High School, the yearbook went out with they have senior quotes in the yearbook. This was deeply transphobic. There are only two genders and a lot of mental illness. This got through. And, you know, these quotes were collected before the COVID crisis. They had plenty of time to read them. So anyway, one student, or maybe a graduate of the school, complained on social media, got 60,000 comments. So the school district apologized. They called it hate speech. And although Merritt Corrigan would disagree, and abhorrent, and the district is investigating. But at least they're apologizing, and they know it's wrong.
Well, I'm more impressed by the apology of Lurie Children's Hospital in Chicago. They have stopped doing surgery on intersex babies, which has been standard practice for so many years. But the new thinking and understanding is that people have a right to determine their own bodily validity.
And so, that it's not just unnecessary, but it's damaging. It can hurt your sensitivity and all those
things. They make very arbitrary decisions about assigning gender to intersex kids. And based on, this penis is too small, so clearly we should get rid of it because it will be psychologically damaging to grow up with a tiny penis. And then people grow up and say, wait a minute, I have male chromosomes, I'm a man, and you've cut off my penis, or vice versa. So the hospital has now apologized for all its years of doing that and announced that it will no longer do those surgeries, and it will, unless necessary, they say. I'm not sure what that means, but that they will allow people to grow up and make their own decisions about their own bodies.
1.7% of people are intersex, and it's seen as a breakthrough in intersex rights. And I'm not trying to be funny here, but what would the right wing and Merritt Corrigan say about this? I mean, this is natural, but they want to say you're either a man or a woman.
They're very hypocritical. And
what do they say about this?
They approve of gender surgery when it suits their supposed principles, as in you're either a man or a woman, and we have to impose that, as opposed to going with their purported principles, which are, God made you the way you are. Self-determination is the answer, Merritt. Self-determination.
I don't think they're for women's choice when it comes to abortion either. All right.
Well, that would also fall under the heading of self-determination.
Right. By the way, I forgot to mention that there was a rally held Sunday in Alabama.
It's coming up.
Oh, that's the one that's coming up?
Yeah.
The Black Trans Lives in Birmingham.
Yes.
We did talk about that. Okay. Next.
The Postal Service.
No. So, well, first of all, the Postal Service, that has me more worried than anything. You know, this guy that, this fundraiser for Trump, Jillionaire, that Trump put in there to destroy it, has already slowed it down. But he has $70 million in investments in competing companies that do delivery services. I mean, how this hasn't been stopped by the Congress. I mean, this is the kind, and you say, well, it's the Democrats. They can't get the Republicans to do anything. I mean,
look, I'd be happy if we could handle all the ballots through any delivery service, if the governments would pay for it, although, of course, that would be a great windfall for FedEx and everybody else. But I'm worried that this the deliveries are just going to stop both ways. No one's going to get the ballots, or if they get them, they're not going to send them back.
When I got my Bugs Bunny stamps, and the news is, and we've got a picture that we're going to put up. This is the first time, apparently, I have trouble believing this, that
I know.
They've done drag, Bugs's drag in a couple of the panels. You know, Bugs is 80 years old now. These were issued on July 27th. But now there's a big push to honor such drag queens and trans heroes as Jose Julio Soria, Sylvia Rivera, Marsha P. Johnson. RuPaul once said that Bugs Bunny introduced him to drag.
I think it's quite charming that Bugs and his drag outfits are two of the new Bugs Bunny stamps.
And our director, Rich, informed me that every time Bugs appeared in drag in a cartoon, The Lady in Red was played, a 1935 song with a quasi-Latinx rumba style.
Well, I'm a big fan of those Warner Brothers cartoons, Bugs and Daffy and all of them.
Okay, some more COVID news. A coalition of health groups and AIDS groups and things in New York City, we have a picture of their press conference with Charles King there, blasted Mayor de Blasio and Governor Cuomo for their late responses to COVID-19 and their failure to engage with communities and community groups affected by the virus. This is the line that, of course, AIDS activists trumpeted in the AIDS crisis. Charlie King, who is also a minister, he runs Housing Works, but he said he has conducted more memorial services than he has since AIDS drugs came along in the mid-90s, and blasted the contact tracing effort that de Blasio was failing at. So de Blasio fires his health commissioner, who was also complaining about that, and put in this guy, I don't know him, Dave Chokshi, as the new health commissioner.
Well, she, the health commissioner who left, Oxira Barbeau, she ran the health department, which has done contact tracing around HIV and all sorts of infections and diseases for decades. But de Blasio didn't like her, and he put the contact tracing operation in the Health and Hospitals Corporation bailiwick, and they had no experience in contact tracing. And it seemed to be just out of spite. And so contact tracing has gone nowhere in New York. And Barbeau was furious about it and other things, I'm sure, and has now quit.
I've been in on his press conferences and I listen to them sometimes online. And, you know, I mean, no matter what it is, he says that's a great point and he doesn't do anything about it. That's the problem.
He's
sending kids back to school. All right. Should we talk about the COVID trials?
I was saving that for our.
All right, let's save it for AIDS news. Shall we go?
International news.
Well, international news. How about that scene in Israel at the Jaffa port? Two gay guys or two guys were sitting together after Arab gay men were set upon by 20 other Arab men, attacked them. 500 people witnessed this, and one person came to their aid, or they would have been killed. It was a hell of a scene. And basically, the other men were saying that, you know, you're giving Arabs a bad name by being who you are.
And they were claiming that the two guys came on to them. So, of course, the answer is to kill them. I don't think so.
I mean, that's the, you know, that's what they all say. Okay.
And in Brazil, another murder of a trans woman, Dorothy de Lima, 40 years old, shot dead in a bar by three masked men. There was some question about whether there was an involvement of some kind of drug deal. But nonetheless, another trans woman of color murdered. And it's quite common in Brazil.
And yeah, absolutely. And in the state of Baja in Mexico, they rejected marriage equality again. Now, the vote was 16-4, 6 against, 3 abstentions. But you need 17 votes to remove it from apparently their state constitution. So, you know, Mexico, we report on this in dribs and drabs about what the states are doing. About half the country is covered by marriage equality. Every time somebody goes to the Mexico Supreme Court, they say, do it, give them the license. But they haven't declared it for the whole country.
No, you have to go through this process one by one. Back to a violence story in El Salvador. Three police officers have been convicted of killing a trans woman in January of 2019. This is the first such conviction. The woman who was murdered was Camila Diaz Cordova. They grabbed her, threw her in the back of a police van, and beat the hell out of her. And 3 days later, she was dead.
They beat the hell out of her, and then they threw her from the moving van.
Yes.
And that's how she died. It's the first homicide conviction for killing a trans person there. And it was cops, no less, who did it. Now, El Salvador has a hate crimes law that they passed in 2015, but they never use it because the judge always says, nah, not enough evidence. Well,
we're not.
This woman, Camila Diaz Cordova, 29, she got to the U.S. border and asked for asylum in 2017, and she was turned away. So we played a role in killing her. She was sent back.
And she's not the only one like that. In Poland.
By the way, they tricked her into signing a return order, the ICE people.
Of course they did.
Scum.
I look forward with trepidation to watching the ICE documentary Immigration Nation that Netflix is just...
You are a glutton for punishment.
I like to know what's going on.
Thank you.
In Poland, town after town there has declared themselves an LGBT-free zone. They think they're so clever about that. But the European Union is having none of it, and they are withholding some funding from the towns which have declared themselves LGBT-free zones. They're not, you know, a few tens of thousands here, a little more there, but it's a very clear and direct message that if this is what you're going to declare yourself, there are going to be consequences for this funding because we are not funding LGBT-free zones.
And the justice minister of Poland is outraged. He wants their bigotry respected. He didn't say it that way, but he's saying, hey, this is us. Get out with that.
Fine, we'll get out with our money.
Well, I mean, you know, I read about Turkey and NATO, and nobody will stand up to them on anything anymore because they feel like they need them, but it's become a horrible place.
It's always the question and the formula. And in the Cayman Islands, the assembly there by a vote of 9-8 has rejected a proposal to legalize domestic partnerships. But all this is going to do is throw all of this to the Privy Council in the UK, which already is considering the case of marriage in Bermuda. And in fact, if the Privy Council decides for marriage equality in Bermuda, that may very well go ahead and legalize full marriage in the Cayman Islands. Not just domestic partnerships.
I want to pay tribute to the passing of another great civil rights leader in Northern Ireland, John Hume, 83. Not a particularly gay story here, although he did vote for domestic partners when he was in the Northern Ireland Assembly. he won the Nobel Peace Prize with a Protestant, John Trimble, in 1998 for brokering the peace in Northern Ireland. And in a 2010 poll in the Republic of Ireland, he was named the greatest Irish person of all time, not St. Patrick, apparently. And in arguing for dialogue, he said, "We have to start spilling our sweat, not our blood." Great peacemaker.
Nice. All right. Now on to AIDS and other health news. So we're hearing optimistic things about vaccine development, although here's my question. If vaccines are, the point of vaccines is to promote antibodies, a reaction to the virus, to boost the immune system reaction. But what we're hearing about people who have COVID or have had it is they develop an immune reaction, but then the immune reaction goes away after a couple of months. So how can we be confident that these vaccines are going to last any longer than the are people going to need booster shots every couple of months with these?
One of the protocols is for two shots of two different things. It may be like the stuff.
Protease inhibitors, combos.
All that stuff, combination drugs. But the other thing is, they think also when you have it, it trains the system to respond immediately again. Trains the T cells. I mean, look, this is all very technical.
Well, we don't know yet that with the natural process, because we haven't had a chance to study people who had it, developed an immune response, lost the immune response, and then were exposed again.
But what we do know is that they're excluding people with HIV from the trials. And they say ostensibly because they fear HIV would impair an immune response. So the researchers and the activists are saying, hey, we're fine. We have a fine immune response. We take the drugs. And what's the problem? And it's really gross and harmful and horrible. It's unconscionable, excuse me, that you're excluding the NIH as a... the NIH is the one that called it unconscionable to exclude.
Well, this came up in the AIDS epidemic, is they wanted to test drugs very narrowly on a very discrete population, because to broaden the population would complicate things. That's why you only get like heart drugs tested on men, because to add women would complicate things. So if you add people with HIV to these trials, complicates it. But we know already that people who have HIV are living with it and are on a good drug regimen and producing an immune response that yes. keeps the virus suppressed have a healthy immune system. Now, so to exclude them from the vaccine trials is unconscionable and nonsensical.
And we were hoping that some of the AIDS drugs would have an effect on this, but so far they don't seem to be curbing COVID-19 on their own. I mean, there are some AIDS drugs that they give you, like remdesivir, when you're very sick. But now...
And NIAID, Fauci's agency, the National Allergy and Infectious Diseases Agency, has told Moderna, which is the one that wrote the trial protocol excluding HIV-positive people, that they must include HIV-positive people in the trial.
We've told you about how this whole crisis is severely disrupting treatment for people with HIV and tuberculosis and a lot of other things.
Malaria.
Especially in Africa, Asian and Latinx America. But it's, you know, people can't travel to get their treatment, which they need to do. Clinics have shuttered. The medication supply chain has broken. 80% of HIV programs report disruptions. And of course, if there's a disruption and you're taking your HIV drugs, you can develop drug resistance. So big problem.
Yeah. Yes, I was fascinated that the New York Times finally noticed that this week. Should we move on to...
Maybe they watch the show along with the evangelical Christians.
Yeah, that's it.
Oh, and also in AIDS news, the Broadway Bears Zoom In show that was on Saturday night, the 30th edition, raised almost $600,000 for Broadway Cares Equity Fights AIDS.
And you can still see it at Broadway.org. And
Broadway.BroadwayCares.org. Oh. It was sexy and fun.
Okay. Well, on that note, we'll move to entertainment news.
Well, let's go to Saturday Night Live.
Saturday Night Live?
Sam J.
Well, Sam J is a writer on Saturday Night Live, but more importantly, she has a new stand-up comedy special on Netflix called Sam J, 3 in the Morning. And she's a black lesbian comedian, and she is something.
We would love to show you a clip, but it would be nothing but bleeps. I laughed, and she's very funny.
She is very funny and very smart and clever and lands a lot of good lines and has some very original thinking. So I see that we both enjoyed it, but this is definitely a not safe for work.
You know, our old outfit, the Hetrick Martin Institute, is looking for a new executive director. I think she'd be terrific.
Fantastic.
With those kids, I mean, the work we used to do in the schools, which was, you know, with all kinds of kids, but mostly kids of color. Can you imagine having all these kids should watch that special if they want to understand about coming to terms with sexuality? Because she talks about growing up in Boston, thinking all lesbians were white, you couldn't be black, all these kinds of things. And, you know, it took her a while to understand who she was. And she did a lot of other things with men in the meantime.
Which you'll hear about right at the beginning of the special. She was interviewed by the New York Times, and they pointed out that she recorded this before George Floyd was murdered in Minneapolis, and therefore before this whole uprising of protest marches and everything, and asked her whether she regretted not being able to talk about that. And she said sort of yes and no, but in watching it, her sensibility is so current and so vibrant that I don't think I noticed that, because it's all about the same stuff anyway.
I like what she said in the interview about talking about living in a white dominant society as akin to spousal abuse.
Yes.
And she said, you know, people say, oh, you know, you're a black person in this society, you're suffering all this, you should get some therapy. She said, no, you should move out.
Well, that's a longer discussion. Maybe she would come on this show and we could discuss it with her. Let's show that video.
So I had never heard of the Miss Lily Award from the Dramatists Guild of America, mostly given for contributions to women in the theater and LGBTQ people. And this time they surprised out producer Tom Curtehy, who did Hadestown and The Inheritance, among other things, presenting, you will see in this video, our playwright, Marcia Norman, with Donna Murphy, who you'll get to hear sing, and Nathan Lane, who may make you laugh.
Hi, Donna.
Hey, Donna. Hi there.
How are you?
Good. Hey, Marcia.
Hi.
Hi.
How are you?
All right. How are you doing?
Good, thanks.
You.
Hi.
Oh, my God.
Hi.
We're just talking about you. As president of the Lily Awards, it's our great pleasure to award you with the very odd title of Miss Lily. We are especially grateful to you this year for not only your partnership with Terrence, and we loved, as you know, but for your producing work and for your spirit, which is clearly apparent now. We are so happy to award you this Miss Lily. And now the festivities begin.
Now you have to go to your front door, Tom. Go to your front door.
Seriously?
Yes.
Go to my front door. Okay.
Here he is, Miss Lily. Although you're not a gal, I know that you're our ally. You never let us down. So sashay up and take your sash and crawl.
Oh my God.
Happy lilies to you. There he is.
I can tell you, Tom, you should count your blessings. They eliminated the swimsuit competition.
I'm very grateful for that.
As the new Miss Lily, you will be required to wear your tiara and sash whenever in public and to promote feminism and pandemic hygiene in the tri-state area for the next year. If you are unable to fulfill your duties as Miss Lily, the runner-up, Scott Rudin, will be given his own will be given his own tiara and sash, and God help us all. Seriously, Tom, this is for your life of activism and advocacy on the part of the LGBTQ community, for your and Terrence's loyal support and encouragement for the Lilies and their activism for women in theater, for producing the female-led Hadestown and Terrence's plays, chopped full-on roles for women, for loving and caring for Terrence because we loved him too. We crown you Tom Curtihy, Miss Lily, 2020.
Yay! Yay!
In a year of extraordinary pain and challenges, it is a genuine blessing to share this with Terrence and to make sure that women's voices are heard and celebrated on stages all across the globe. And I want to say thank you and to this gorgeous.
Look at these.
It's been a tough year, but wearing this tiara is a great balm for all the pain. Thank you.
Yay!
Yay. Yay. So those references, of course, were to Tom's late husband, Terrence McNally, the legendary playwright, along with legendary producer Tom, and sweet guy. Great to have him be able to get an award like that.
Nice to be
an ally to women.
Nice to be surprised. Lifetime Television has announced the first Christmas movie with LGBTQ lead romance. It's called The Christmas Setup, about a gay corporate lawyer from New York getting matchmaked by his mom in Milwaukee. Won't tell you more than that. But, you know, the Hallmark Channel won't do us.
That's not true.
Wait a minute. They say they never highlight gay couples in their movies.
No.
Oh, help me out.
I will if you give me a chance to say it. Yes, Lifetime has announced that movie. It's in production, even in this age of COVID. Hallmark has announced that it will be making an announcement shortly of upcoming made-for-TV movies, and they will include LGBTQ storylines and characters. So this is after they went through their whole thing last year about being blasted for censoring an ad that had a lesbian bridal couple. And because 1 million moms, which is probably one person, went after them, and then they restored the ad, but they still, and they had one movie where they had an ancillary gay couple, just, you know, friends of the main couple or something. But now they promise they're going to have same-sex couples in upcoming Hallmark movies too.
Well, I'd like to see Sam J and her lover, who sound like a very interesting couple.
Well, I'd like to see well, one thing I have temporarily at least acquired Netflix, as you can tell by the fact that I saw the Sam J stand-up special. And I decided this weekend I would dip into Grace and Frankie.
Yeah.
I know. After I saw the first episode, I thought, no, I can't tolerate this.
They used to get nominated all the time for awards.
I kept watching, and I ended up watching all six seasons.
Oh, my God.
78 episodes.
And I said, folks, a glutton for punishment. Maybe.
Of course, you know, maybe it's Stockholm Syndrome, but I liked it more as it went along. You watch anything long enough and you get sucked into the characters. And here's what I liked about it that I thought was different and not just sitcom-y. And some of it, of course, is sitcom-y, and it sort of jumps the shark in the last couple of seasons. But it's a show about people making a lot of mistakes with each other and forgiving each other. And that forgiveness is a constant in the show several times in every episode. And I found that quite impressive, actually. Is it an earth-shattering show? Absolutely not. But to me, it's a pleasure to watch a little Jane Fonda and Lily Tomlin. There's some, aside from their ex-husbands being married to each other, there are other homoerotic moments between those women and other women on the show. And it's nothing deep, but it's a little deeper than normal. And so I wouldn't force anyone to watch it. There are a lot of shows I like a lot better, but it was okay.
Do you forgive Ellen?
No. I have never quite thought Ellen was look, I don't know Ellen. She may be the greatest person in the world. I have no business making comments about Ellen and whether she's nice or not. But she came out this week and with a note to her staff apologizing for the racist, discriminatory treatment by producers.
Yes.
So they're nailing the producers on this. Meanwhile, I can't even remember who. Oh, Brad Garrett. Brad Garrett of Everybody Loves Raymond. He came out and said, look, everyone in Hollywood knows that Ellen is not nice to her staff. And then some actress who I just remembered, Brad Garrett, I'm not going to remember who the actress was, said, yes, that's true. That is what everyone thinks.
Well,
I don't know.
I don't know what Megan Rapinoe's like in private, but she's got a new show called Seeing America with Megan Rapinoe.
I saw it, too.
She had
between Grace and Frankie episodes.
Alexandria.
Epidemic. I do leave the house to go play golf and food shop and even have dinner with friends. But
really, I haven't worked my courage up to do that yet. I take walks with friends with a mask on.
Outdoor patio in the middle of Stuyvesant Town, separated quite.
I want to live.
Well, I do, too.
Next week, our guest is going to be gay Nigerian refugee Adafe Okporo. Is that how you say his name?
Yes. Spoke at the Queer Liberation March rally last year.
He now runs a shelter for asylum seekers in New York. And what a life story he has to tell, which is we read about him. We want to have him tell it to you next week.
Right. So Adafe will join us next week, Nigerian refugee. And a great guy and doing great work. So we look forward to sharing that with you.
And thanks for all being with us. And if everybody does great work, we can redeem this country.
And thank you to Manhattan Neighborhood Network, which has kept us on the air. See you next week.